Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. So today, let's start with an article about George Clooney, the sexiest man still alive. That's his joke, not theirs. And this article is from AARP, the magazine. It's a very long article, so I won't be able to do all of it today, but we'll continue with that the next time. On the cusp of 60, the practical joking husband, actor, activist, and father of 3-year-old twins is starting to feel his age. But so far, he's got it covered. Thank you. This is by Joel Stein. George Clooney was never young. I mean, yes, George Clooney, the person, was once young, trotting alongside his newscaster father to beauty pageants in Indiana and fixing pipes as the mullet-type topped 24-year-old handyman on The Facts of Life. The George Clooney we know, though, didn't materialize in our collective consciousness until the first episode of ER, when he was 33. In most roles, he's played someone older than his age, wearing sharp suits or scrubs, uniforms, or space suits. He's talked about the atrocities in Darfur, had dinners with Barack Obama and Walter Cronkite. But George Clooney was also never old. He was a bachelor, rode a motorcycle, had a weekly basketball game, created his own tequila, owned a pet pig, played practical jokes. He was always the same age, the bubbly, exactly in the middle of a spirit level measuring from man to guy. But George Clooney had neck surgery last fall after a scooter accident in 2018, and when the doctors were examining him, they found some arthritis. It was a bad accident. You can go online to watch video from a hotel security cam and see Clooney launched at about 70 miles per hour, his helmet shattering a car's windshield, his body cannonballed out of his own shoes, his mouth full of what he thought were shattered teeth, but was actually glass. Even though he's still at his high school weight and recovered quickly, and he's been in motorcycle accidents before, he has kids and a wife now, so he won't be riding ever again. And basketball, that's too tough now, too. For 10 years, Clooney had declined offers to be on the cover of this magazine, though he did consider doing it as a joke when he turned 50. I wanted to do a funny bit, which would be Sexiest Man Still Alive. I would have done some funny pictures, like with a walker, he says, over Zoom from the screening room of his Los Angeles home. Now that I'm about to turn 60, it's not as funny, he adds, running a hand through his cropped, more salt-than-pepper hair. And when AARP, the magazine's Movies for Grown-Ups, awarded him the Career Achievement Award, he surrendered. I always say to my dad, I'm middle-aged. And he goes, you know a lot of 120-year-olds? I'm 49 years old and 6 months, just a short time away from receiving that fateful red and white letter inviting me to join AARP and start getting this magazine, and I wanted advice from the embodiment of graceful aging. I've interviewed Clooney 3 times before. Once over the phone when he left his home number on my voicemail instead of setting up a meeting through a publicist, once at his bachelor pad as he sat under a photo of the Rat Pack, and once over a very long dinner I cooked for him at my house. Each time I've received his teachings. When he rejected my store-bought salad dressing with disdain, I permanently switched to oil, vinegar, salt, and pepper. I upgraded to a more expensive house because Clooney, who owns no stocks or bonds, believes in living in his money. I learned simple home repairs after Clooney made me get a ladder from the storage space under my house with him so he could climb into the attic. I've never been in, screwdriver in his mouth, crawling across the beams to fix a noise that turned out to be a carbon monoxide alarm in the kitchen that needed new batteries. Now I wanted advice on just how I should negotiate the future. The same question he asks in his new movie, The Midnight Sky, with Netflix, which he not only stars in but also directed and co-produced. In the film, Clooney plays his oldest character yet, a terminally ill scientist rummaging through the post-apocalyptic Antarctic, contemplating whether he has spent his life well. The movie wasn't supposed to be that existential. He finished filming last February and had just started post-production when, on May 11th, the NBA canceled its games and the people who ran the editing room announced that older people would have to work from home for their own safety. They said, "If you're under 50, you're fine," says Clooney. And I was like, "Wait a minute, I'm the old guy now?" Editing in lockdown in his house, Clooney made a movie that had started as a warning about the dangers of rising nationalism and on the beach of populism, and kept removing dialogue until this turned the film into a meditation on not being able to connect, the perils of isolation and fading away. You couldn't help it when you're in the middle of editing from your home, where you can't go out and you can't see anyone, he explains. For the role, he drew a David Letterman beard, he grew it, gave himself a spotty crew cut, and he might not smile once in the entire film. If you are this sex symbol, and that's tied to some notion of youth, you can feel where there's a holding on instead of a letting go, said David Oyelowo, who portrays an astronaut in space in the movie, unaware of Earth's apocalypse. That's what he does in The Midnight Sky that's so eye-catching. There's not an iota of that George Clooney eye twinkle or the sexiest man alive. He has completely shelved it. You're allowed to really look at him. You're going, whoa, this same guy from Out of Sight with J-Lo is here with a beard and not saying any lines and letting us hike the crevices of his face? Clooney, unwilling to let that bubble on the level move, rejects this theory, noting that he's playing charmless men in The American and Syriana. He scoffs at the notion that he cares less about his looks than he once did. When I ask if he's wearing makeup, because his tan appears to be bouncing off his white, short-sleeved, button-down shirt, he acts like I'm crazy. "I've never worn makeup in my life," he insists. "If I have to have a black eye, I'll put a black eye on, but I've never had paper around my collar. I did when I first started, because I did what everybody told me I had to do. By the time I started ER, never." And his perfect hair, he hasn't put effort into that either. Not only does he claim to have cut his own hair during the pandemic, he says he's done it for 25 years. "I use a Flowbee," he asserts to me, and shortly afterward to half a dozen other media outlets, mentioning that he's already worn out the vacuum attachment sold on infomercials in the 1980s, requiring his assistant to buy a replacement on eBay. "My wife won't let me Flowbee my son's hair, so I have to cut it with scissors. I'm scrappy, buddy. I climbed up into your attic," I sigh, upset in the knowledge that I will soon be buying a Flowbee. Despite these objections, others besides Oyelowo, as Clooney's father Nick and mom Nina, 87 and 81 respectively, have observed, that George has been letting go of the oh-so-bearable lightness of George Clooney. Since George has become a parent, they note, he has been willing to have more earnest conversations with them. He used to like very much to make sure that everybody had a good line to exit on, says Nick. "I see lots of requiring us to put on a routine." Well, much as I would love to keep going, as I said, this is a very long article, so we're going to take it in bits and pieces. And for now, let's move on to an article from Health Immunity Protect Yourself magazine. And this one is entitled Sleep It Off. And we will come back to George Clooney another time. Your mother was right. A good night's sleep is a key part in keeping your immune system working and helping you recover from sickness faster. This is by Courtney Mifsud. In the ancient world, many cultures took their sleep seriously. For example, the healer gods Imhotep in Egypt and Asclepius in Greece were thought to have the power to cure followers' ailments through the power of sleep. More than 4,000 years ago, the Egyptians set up sleep temples where the afflicted were put into a trance-like sleep, and then priests and priestesses interpreted the person's dreams to understand the illness and find a cure. Dreams were also seen as a way for mortals to connect with higher beings who had the power to perform miraculous healings. Similar techniques were used at sleep temples in ancient Greece. For millennia since then, folk wisdom has dictated that some of the best medicine was a good night's sleep. While modern science has moved away from sleep temples, and dream analysis is not seen as a path to curing physical ills, the idea that sleep can heal the body and help strengthen the immune system to prevent sickness is well studied and reported. Growing research supports the notion that sleep plays a vital role in how the immune system is prepared to fight off infections, how a vaccine can effectively mount an immune response, and how quickly and easily a sick person can recover from illness. The power of sleep. A lot happens during sleep, including complex hormonal changes that benefit the immune system. Sleep deprivation studies show that sleep appears to help the body reach inflammatory homeostasis, meaning a state of equilibrium in which the internal environment is steady and stable. Without sufficient sleep, the body produces fewer cytokines, proteins that target inflammation and infection. There is also a direct link between a certain stage of sleep and immune function. Slow-wave sleep, also known as deep sleep, is recognized as a time for the brain to recover from the day's activities. During deep sleep, the body produces growth hormone, GH, which directly relates to the robustness of the immune system. GH stimulates T and B cell production, the armies of cells that respond to foreign invaders to fight infection, and antibody synthesis. GH is also able to control cytokine response, but there is a diminishing return on growth hormone as we age. Adults tend to spend only about 20 to 25% of their night in GH-producing deep sleep, but that number is much lower than a child's. As we get older, that's the one stage of sleep that tends to decline, says Chris Winter, MD, president of Charlottesville Neurology and Sleep Medicine in Virginia, and also author of The Sleep Solution, Why Your Sleep is Broken and How to Fix It. We get so much deep sleep when we're little. Obviously, we're making growth hormone and growing, but it really tapers off. And sort of all through our life, that deep sleep tends to become diminished. So it's really important we get it when we can. The crosstalk. When you get sick, sometimes all you want is a good sleep. That's because the body is hardwired to want longer and deeper sleep when its defense system is triggered. The immune system is activated by microbial interferences, and it in turn launches an inflammatory response. Depending on a number of factors, such as magnitude of the response, that can lead to an increase in sleep duration and intensity. A 2019 review from the Institute of Medical Psychology and Behavioral Neurobiology, published in the journal Physiological Reviews, examined this crosstalk between the immune system and sleep. By reviewing decades of research in both human and animal studies, the researchers explained that findings in both areas show that pathogens or their components are able to alter sleep. The authors of the review explained that observations of enhanced or intensified sleep in response to acute infectious challenges have led to the hypothesis that sleep is beneficial for host defense mechanisms and or host recovery. According to the researchers, a potential explanation for why this sleep immune system crosstalk exists is that energy is allocated to the immune system during sleep, allowing it to be more effective. The magic number? Most experts, including the National Sleep Foundation, recommend that adults get 7 to 9 hours of sleep per night. For teenagers, that range is 8 to 10 hours, and school-aged children should be getting between 9 and 11 hours every night. And those numbers are tried and tested. In 2015, a four-year study revealed that short sleepers are 4 times as likely to catch a cold when exposed to the virus, compared with those who get the recommended amount of shut-eye. According to the lead author of the study, this research was the first to use objective sleep measures to draw a connection between people's natural sleep habits and their risk of getting sick. Short sleep was more important than any other factor in predicting subjects' likelihood of catching cold, said Eric Prather, MD, Associate Professor of Psychiatry at the University of California, San Francisco, at the time of publication. It didn't matter how old people were, their stress levels, their race, education, or income. It didn't matter if they were a smoker. With all those things taken into account, statistically, sleep still carried the day. Published in the journal Sleep, the study examined 164 volunteers from the Pittsburgh area between 2007 and 2011 and found that subjects who had slept fewer than 6 hours a night the week before were more than 4.2 times as likely to catch the cold compared with those who got the recommended 7 hours of sleep. Those who slept less than 5 hours were 4.5 times as likely to catch the virus. It goes beyond feeling groggy or irritable, Prather said. Not getting sleep fundamentally affects your physical health. According to Winter, who works with athletes, those who feel they can skimp on sleep, go to bed at midnight and wake up 5 hours later so they can hit the gym for 3 hours, are doing their bodies a disservice. The ability to do it and the ability to be healthy are really two different things, which is something that some people really just kind of have to deal with, said Winter. But what if your lifestyle doesn't line up with getting 8 hours of sleep every single night? Maybe you're a doctor or a new parent, someone whose lifestyle actively prevents you from getting the recommended hours of shut-eye. Winters points to research on sleep debt, meaning that the body can make up missed sleep in the short term. Looking at sleep as a weekly total from Sunday to Sunday, 8 hours of sleep a night means 56 hours a week. Napping for an hour or two at the peak of sleepiness can offset what a night owl missed out on during his or her nightly sleep. If you're somebody who needs your 56 hours and you're on call tonight, or your kid is sick, or something prevents you from getting that time in bed that you need, then you can make up for it within the week, said Winter. Research would show that you're still going to be as healthy or live as long as that annoying individual who always gets a perfect 8 hours of sleep every night. But nap wisely. Taking too long of a nap or taking a rest too close to bedtime can make it difficult to fall asleep at night, making an already challenged sleep schedule even more troubled. So, the more sleep, the better, right? Not really. These recommendations have a cap because there's an inverse reaction that happens when you get too much sleep. Research shows that too many hours of sleep can be associated with poor health outcomes, and oversleeping doesn't help you. Once you've gotten what you need, and we all have a genetic predisposition to need a certain amount of sleep, getting more doesn't allow you to bank it, said Winter. Getting 13 hours tonight doesn't necessarily allow you to sleep more tomorrow night. Now we're moving on to the Essential Retirement Guide magazine and taking a look at the benefits of budgeting. You wouldn't run a business without a financial plan, so why would you run your life without one? Sitting down to make a budget isn't many people's idea of a good time. But then again, neither is living with uncertainty about your financial future. For retirees living on a fixed income, creating a budget is an important way to ensure that your lifestyle today doesn't jeopardize your financial well-being tomorrow. Even if you're flush with savings and plenty of passive income, it's still important to plan for the unexpected. Once you stop working, it's easy to let lifestyle inflation creep in. Instead of eating leftovers at your desk for lunch, you may now be going out with friends a couple of times a week. You may fill all that free time with cultural events, vacations, and hobbies you enjoy. That's what retirement is all about, right? But all that recreation can take a big bite out of your savings if you're not careful. Sticking to a budget doesn't have to mean closing the door on opportunities to enjoy yourself. It just means being selective so that you can continue to enjoy your retirement for years to come. Make one decision, not lots of decisions. When you make a budget, you're deciding to prioritize your long-term financial health. It's one big decision that saves you from making lots of small and potentially costly decisions on a daily basis. For example, an invitation from friends to try out a trendy new restaurant can be tough to turn down in the moment. But if your budget doesn't include money for dining out, the decision has already been made for you. Turning down the invite may feel momentarily disappointing, but you'll ultimately feel better for having stuck to your plan, saving yourself from financial stress down the road. Without a budget, you have no control. Small expenditures here and there don't feel like much in the moment, but over the course of a month, a $5 daily expense, like a latte from the cafe down the street, adds up to $150 monthly, or $1,800 over the course of a year. What if, instead of withdrawing that money from your IRA, you had let it sit there instead? If you're retiring on a relatively low income, not having a budget also puts you at risk of not having enough money to pay your bills at the end of the month. When that happens, you may end up taking on debt to cover your expenses or having to withdraw more than planned from your investment portfolio. And that, in turn, could leave you at risk of outliving your savings. Budgeting for the long haul. You may have imagined that retirement would mean not needing to worry about money. After all, you've spent so many years working and diligently contributing to your retirement accounts. So now, shouldn't you be able to rest easy? Yes, but in many ways, resting easy has a lot to do with your mindset. If you can avoid thinking of budgeting as restrictive and instead see it as a way of ensuring more possibilities for your future, it doesn't have to be painful. A good retirement budget is one that allows you to enjoy what's important to you both now and in years to come. For example, some people who love traveling could seriously deplete their savings with a few unplanned whirlwind adventures. It might feel great in the moment, but if you eat away at your nest egg early on, you probably won't be able to afford to keep up the spending later in life. If instead you budget for one or two modest vacations each year, you have a better chance at maintaining the financial stability you need to keep up your global trotting lifestyle. Even those with plenty of money socked away will want to stick to a budget in retirement if they plan on leaving an inheritance for their loved ones. If you feel comfortable with the amount you've saved over your lifetime, chances are it's because some careful planning went into getting you where you are. That's a very good reason to keep going. How to build a budget. Creating a budget for retirement doesn't have to be complicated. Put simply, it's a process that involves calculating how much money comes in and how much money goes out. Here's how to start building a budget that works for you. Calculate your after-tax income. Just because you're retired doesn't mean you stop paying taxes. Depending on your income, up to 85% of what you receive through Social Security may be taxable. You'll also have to pay taxes on any rental income, as well as withdrawals from a 401k or traditional IRA. Figure out which tax bracket you fall into and how much of your income you'll need to set aside for Uncle Sam. Whatever amount is left over is your after-tax income. Tip: when you apply for Social Security benefits, you can ask the government to automatically withhold taxes from your benefit checks, saving you the trouble of making that calculation yourself. Next, figure out your expenses. Start with the necessities: housing costs, transportation, groceries, and anything else you can't do without. Be careful not to confuse needs with wants. For example, do you really need cable bundled with your internet package? It's natural for your expenses to fluctuate during retirement. If you make a major lifestyle change, you can always rework your budget to reflect your new expenses. Subtract your needs from your income. Let's say your monthly after-tax income, including Social Security benefits and distributions from retirement accounts, is $3,200. When you add up your housing costs, your phone bill, transportation, and any other necessities, you get a total of $2,400. Subtract the cost of necessities from your total income, and now you have left $800 per month for discretionary spending. If you're withdrawing your required minimum distribution but don't need it for current expenses, you can always reinvest it into low-risk, tax-efficient vehicles like municipal bonds. Plan for the unexpected. No matter how much you plan for retirement, there are sure to be surprises along the way. You may end up wanting to move closer to a family, or a medical issue could slow you down for a while. Make sure that even as you draw from your savings, you're keeping in place some for a rainy day. Tip: look over your last few bank statements and note how you've been spending money. In an emergency, are there places where you could cut back on your spending to avoid depleting your account? And finally, keep track of your investments. Whether you're following the 4% withdrawal rule or another system, you'll want to keep an eye on your portfolio. That shouldn't be difficult if you check regular statements from your bank and your brokerage accounts. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.